If you want to get to the beginning of the shale revolution, pick up Interstate 35E out of Dallas and head north 40 miles and then take the turnoff for the tiny town of Ponder. Past the feed store, the white water tower, the sign for the cowboy church, and the donut store that's closed down. Another 4 miles and you're in Dish, Texas. Population, about 400. You end up at a wire mesh fence around a small tangle of pipes with a built-in stepladder. You're there. The S.H. Griffin No. 4 Natural Gas Well. The sign on the fence tells the date. Drilled in 1998. That was not exactly a great time to be drilling a well. Oil and gas prices had cratered with the Asian financial crisis and the ensuing global economic panic. But S.H. Griffin No. 4 would change things more than anyone could have imagined at the time. The well was drilled mainly with standard technology, but also with experimentation and ingenuity, despite considerable skepticism. The small band of believers working on the well were convinced that somehow you could extract natural gas from dense shale rock in a way that was commercially viable, something that the petroleum engineering textbook said was impossible. More than anyone else, the unshakable conviction belonged to one man, their boss, George P. Mitchell. He had been a true believer for a long time. To grasp the intensity of that conviction, you have to understand that the road to S.H. Griffin No. 4 really begins much longer ago, in a tiny village in Greece's Peloponnesian Peninsula. In 1901, an illiterate 20-year-old shepherd named Savas Paraskevopoulos decided that his only ticket out of a life of poverty was to emigrate to the United States. By the time he ended up in Galveston, Texas, he had been rechristened Mike Mitchell. He eventually opened a laundry and shoeshine shop that just barely supported his family. His son George enrolled at Texas A&M University, where he studied geology and the relatively new discipline of petroleum engineering. George was poor, and this was the time of the Great Depression. To pay his way through school, he sold candy and embossed stationery to the other students, waited on their tables, and did tailoring on their clothes. He also captained the tennis team and came top in his class. After World War II, Mitchell did not want to work for anyone else. With a couple of partners, he opened an office as a consulting geologist atop a Houston drugstore. By the 1970s, he had built a sizable oil and gas company, though with ups and downs along the way. But he had an unusual proclivity. He favored natural gas over oil. Around 1972, he came across The Limits to Growth, a book by an environmental group, the Club of Rome. It predicted that a soon-to-be overpopulated world would run out of natural resources. Intrigued, he became increasingly interested in environmental issues. Natural gas became for him not only a business, but also a cause, for it was cleaner than burning coal. Sometimes he would call up people and berate them if he thought that they had said something nice about coal. Fueled by his new environmental ethos, he launched a totally different business, creating a wooded, landscaped, 44-square-mile master-planned community north of Houston called The Woodlands. Its slogan was The Livable Forest. Today, it has a population over 100,000. Mitchell involved himself in the decision-making down to the details of the flower beds and trees and populating it with wild turkeys, until one got shot. Yet he could hardly ignore his energy business. He had a big problem. Mitchell Energy was contracted to provide 10% of Chicago's natural gas. But the reserves of gas in the ground to support that contract were running down. Mitchell Energy needed to do something. That is when Mitchell stumbled across a possible solution. In 1981, he read the draft of a journal article by one of his geologists. The article offered a hypothesis that ran counter to what was taught in geology and petroleum engineering classes. It suggested that commercial gas could be extracted deep underground from very dense rock, denser than concrete. This was the source rock, the kitchen in which organic material was cooked for several million years and transformed into oil or gas. It was thought at the time that oil and gas might still remain in the shale, but could not be produced on a commercial basis because they could not flow through the dense rock. The draft article disagreed. Mitchell, beset by worries about the contract for Chicago, became convinced that here might be the road to his company's salvation. There had to be a way to prove the received wisdom wrong.